Hello, everyone. My name is Brooklyn Myers, and I am an Elixir newbie. My goal is to help people adopt Elixir and grow as developers while doing the same myself. I do that by documenting and sharing my own experience in the Elixir industry. It's been an incredible journey so far, and I look forward to taking the next step with you. So, let's jump in to the Elixir Newbie Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Elixir Newbie Podcast. Today, I am joined by my friend, coworker, and author of the Entity Component System, ECSX framework for Elixir, which is for building games and simulations, and bringing that to the Elixir ecosystem, which is incredibly exciting to see that ecosystem expand. Game development is something that I think most folks haven't traditionally thought about. Now, there are some applications being built in Elixir that are kind of like simulation focused. I believe there's a flight simulator that is Elixir focused on their back end. But it's not something that I think we have traditionally gone in the direction of. So I'm really excited for Andrew's work here. I've been getting to follow him along on this project and see how the library has been evolving. So Andrew, I'm super excited to have you here. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Brooklyn. I'm glad to be here.
We get to chat fairly frequently about Elixir, Dockyard Academy. So we both work together at Dockyard. The ECSX framework is something that you have been working, I believe, kind of like in your spare time, finding room for it. So how on earth do you manage both the workload of work and also develop a fully featured library at the same time? How are you managing this?
Yeah, so I have to give full credit to Dockyard. I'm a senior Elixir engineer at Dockyard. And one of the things that Dockyard does is provide... we have 32-hour work weeks, Monday through Thursday. And then on Fridays, we have what's called Dockyard Fridays, where we're able to work on open source contributions, work on our own hobby projects, do independent learning, things like that, basically just a skill up day. And so for me, I started a program, a mentorship program, with another Elixir engineer who is much more experienced than me. And we were looking for a project to work on. And, you know, at the time I was not particularly new to Elixir, but at the same time, like I still was trying to approach with a beginner's mind of like, what is something that I can do that would push me outside of my Elixir comfort zone? And, you know, one of those things was a general usage of OTP in projects. Like, I think a lot of Elixir developers end up kind of almost being forced into web development all day, every day. You know, that's like the main use case for Elixir. And, you know, obviously OTP plays a big role in Phoenix and in LiveView, but I think that there's other ways where OTP is such a versatile group of technologies that there's a lot of applications for it that I just had never really had much experience with, and is you could still say that like there's a lot of avenues out there, especially with regard to like embedded systems, where you know most Elixir engineers don't really have any experience with that. But my goal was to find something that would push me to stretch my OTP muscles, so to speak, but also end up with hopefully something that could be a useful library for the Elixir community. I was looking specifically for something that I felt like the Elixir community was lacking or at the very least short on. And I think that was the one thing that ever since I started Elixir, like especially coming from object-oriented languages and a math background too, which is, you know, like I feel like goes hand in hand with game development. And so that was always something that was on my mind in other languages. And then coming to Elixir, like it's almost like you hit a brick wall. Like you say the phrase game development and everyone just like is like, no. Before the words even come off your lips, people are just like, no, we don't do that here. And so I think that one of the things that I was really thinking of was like, why? And then what potential solutions could Elixir have in its toolkit with, you know, having OTP available to us? Like, how can we use those tools in order to get around some of the perceived limitations of game development in Elixir? And that was a long process of me and my mentor both working back and forth, like having ideas, implementing ideas, watching those ideas fail, benchmarking different ideas, having things that just were slower or harder to reason about, adding unnecessary complexity, like trimming the fat, like, you know, there was just so much. Like if you were to see what the project looked like at the beginning, it was really kind of a mess and was slowly polished and polished and polished until eventually it was something usable. And then at that point, it leads to several other challenges, which are like, okay, how to get this out there in the community, how to prove it, how to even sell ECS. Because, like, you know, for some people who are already in the game development space have already heard of ECS. Like, maybe they're using the ECS implementation in Unity and they're like, oh, this is awesome. But I think for most people, they've never even heard of it before. So, definitely, like, there were several other challenges, even non-programming related, that it became clear that we were going to have to face in bringing this library to the community and finding a way that it can be useful to people for their own projects.
So with that, it's very interesting that this started out as what seems like kind of a learning project, like, oh, I really want to learn about this, and then has grown into a, okay, well, now how do we share this with the community? And so you're probably getting to learn a lot of skills that you probably hadn't even been your intention. Like, how do you broadcast something to the community? How do you make people aware of it? How do you make it easy to adopt? I know that you had me ages back go through and just play with the system and then try it out. That was super fun. But at the time, I don't think there was much nearly the same level of guides and easy entry, and so I'm pretty sure I completely flubbed it. Like I had all the things in the wrong order, and I just did things incorrectly. And I know you had mentioned that kind of inspired you to add more to it, and we can talk about how you've made adoption a lot easier. But I really want to know what kinds of games, what kinds of tools, like before we get into the implementation of ECS and how this helps and what it does, what does it let us do?
Yeah, so I suppose the simplest answer is it allows us to build games in Elixir. And, you know, I think most people in the Elixir community who have come from other languages, we recognize that, you know, what we do in Elixir, it's not like you can't do it in other languages. Like that part's not really up for debate. But what is up for debate is the experience that you're going to have when building in this language versus another language. Like maybe you get the same end product, but what does it feel like to develop? How long does it take to develop? How many engineers did you need in order to make that happen? And I think those are the strengths that Elixir brings to the table, among many others. But I think that that's really one of the biggest deals to people, like especially when you have experience in other languages and a lot of other code bases. And then you come to Elixir and you're like, oh, okay, this actually has simplified the development process quite a bit, made the development process a lot quicker and taken out a lot of the foot guns. And so this same philosophy is kind of what I was trying to bring to ECSX. Like, it's not that you couldn't build a game in Elixir before, but what I want right now is that you can build a game in 5 minutes by yourself. You know, like that's really what I'm getting at here is like the developer experience should be number one. Like I want people to be able to pick this up, have a very simple interface, but also a very simple design architecture. Like even outside the ECSX framework, just the entity component system architecture as a whole is a very, in my eyes, convenient way of looking at a real-time application. Like you have components and you have systems. That's pretty much it. Like you have an entire backend just with that. And components store your data. Systems are the logic that operates on the data. Like it's very, very simple. And once you're actually working in a code base with that architecture, it's very simple to make changes. Like when you need to add a new feature, there's not as much refactoring like the existing pieces of code that kind of touch your feature. Like there's a lot more compartmentalizing of when you have a feature, like it's very likely that feature is going to have some data that backs it and then some logic that affects game entities when that based on the presence or value of that component. So you have a feature, you create a component, you create a system, and there's your feature. And it is often the case that the existing components and the existing systems don't need to be touched. So you get a good separation of game logic. You get separation of data in a way that is still very composable. Like you can have, I'm not sure if you want to go too far into like the ECS architectural design process in this talk, but basically if you have a component, like a hit points component, HP, you could give that to any type of entity you want, and it will now have hit points, and it will now have systems that operate on hit points containing entities with hit points will now be included in that selection. So if you were to give something like a bullet some hit points, like now the bullet is now, it's not just this thing that flies through the air and deals damage, but it also is now something that can take damage from things and maybe even die. So you're really able to extend the entities in your game really quite easily by just adding and removing components. So instead of having like, okay, this is a player character, which always has these specific fields in the character. And then you have this bullet, and that the bullet always has these fields, you know, velocity and such and such. It's it takes away all of the rigidity of that and instead allows you to compose components really any way you want. And for me, like that just, this style creates games very quickly. And going back into the games, making changes to things, I don't know. Ever since I found ECS architecture, I think that there's really two main advantages that have kept me sticking with it and wanting to spread this type of architectural pattern to the community. One is the development speed and just the way of thinking about the games is really, it's really improved over the traditional object-oriented models that I used to use.
Yeah, the composability really strikes me as quite interesting, and its ability to bring these systems together and bring these components together to create this functioning game. So I want to give a bit of an overview of the different terms we're using, maybe some examples if that's possible, because we've talked so far about entities, components, systems, and then I know there's also a few other concepts, tags and managers. And I think I understand some of them, and I think I'm a little bit fuzzy on some of them. So can we start with our entity? That is the thing that binds our components together, right? That is the thing. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, so in a traditional game, like you would have entities, and each entity will have a set of data that always comes with that entity. If you have a player character, like it has, it's like a map or a struct or whatever with the fields inside it that make up that entity. In ECSX or any ECS game, an entities don't really exist as data. So if I have an entity and it's a player character and it has, let's say, hit points, level, and class, how that exists in the database is you have a hit points component, a class component, and a level component. And that's it. Like the reason why you know that those three things, that there is a player character, is because those are associated with a particular ID. So let's say you have the player character's ID is 123. So the component's job is two things. One is to store the data. So if it has 50 hit points, like obviously it has to store an integer 50. But then it also has to store what the ID of that entity that it belongs to. So your component now has your ID 123 of the entity, and then the hit points 50. And same thing for the level. Maybe it's entity 123, level 3, something like that. So the entity never really exists as data somewhere. The entity is just an association that all of the components have to show what entity that component belongs to. And so I think that's probably the most difficult thing to wrap your head around when getting into ECS, is just that data is always components, and that you associate components towards like a metaphysical entity. Like it doesn't actually, the entity doesn't exist in the database somewhere. It just is.
Right. And that is because they're all grouped together by some kind of identifier. The entity really is the identifier in a way. That's the thing that groups all of your components together. Your components track the data.
Exactly.
Perfect. And then let's talk about, so we used hit points as our example of a component. Let's continue that story to system. What is a system?
Right. So we mentioned that, let's say, a player has hit points, a level, and a class. So these things, we don't pay so much attention to class at first and just focus on like hit points even. What's the whole point of having hit points? Like that's really the question that systems ask is, what is the point of this component? Like if you have a piece of data that's tied to your entity, like it signifies that you're going to want to use that for something. And so the system is that something. So in the case of hit points exist so that when you get hit, you take damage. So you like that right there shows what the system logic needs to be. Like the system logic is going to check for attacks that are currently about to happen. And then it's going to lower the number that's in those hit points components for anyone who's being attacked. And so that's one system. That's like a damage system. When you get hit, the damage system lowers your hit points. But hit points also serve the purpose of when they reach zero, you lose the game. So that's another system. Like what this system is simply going to do is just look for hit point components that are zero or less. And if it finds that, then it's going to do something. Just like the damage component is like its trigger is an attack is happening. Like, and so that might come from something else, like in a component for like attack damage or pending attack or however, whatever that trigger is, or collision even. And then once that trigger is met, then the system will deal the damage. Same with the death system. Like one, the trigger is a hit point component has gone to zero. And then the effect of the logic is that entity that has that component dies. And by trigger here, I do want to clarify, because I think that could mean a few things conceptually when people hear that word. And here, a trigger is really just other component data. It's not necessarily like an event, but if you do have events like an attack that's firing, like those are still modeled with components. Like that's the thing designing with ECS is everything is a component. Like you have to find some way to make it into a component, even if it seems like you're not really sure, oh, how do I do this? And that's why a big part of this project is just teaching the ECS design architecture. Like you might not see as the user, how is this a component? Like this seems like something that should need something special. And it's like, no, there is a way to model this with components. And when you model it with components, that's what gives it the hook into the system. That's what allows the systems to know which entities to operate on, which components to operate on is based on other component data.
So I want to clarify trigger here a bit for myself. Because my understanding is that systems will run on every tick. Is the trigger like a condition that determines if they should actually do something, or is a trigger outside of the system? Like, is this some control flow I'm writing in my system, I think run function, or is this something I'm writing outside of the system?
Yeah. So this is, so once again, like ECS does a fantastic job of simplifying everything. Just like I said, when you have some data and you don't know how to store it, there's only one answer. Like if your answer isn't components, it's wrong. Like, so it's similar to the actual game logic. There's only one place for game logic to live, and it's not entities or components. So when you have game logic, yeah, it has to be in the system. And what was your question? It was about the selection of what
components. What is that trigger? Is that like a bit of control flow I write inside of my system? That's like, if some character is in attacking range, do an attack, like apply some damage to their health or whatever it is, change a component in some way.
Right. So generally how this has worked out for me is get all components of this type. So if you're a something that is like, let's say you're a system that is going to reduce hit points for entities that are poisoned. You know, if you're poisoned, you lose 5 hit points per second, something like that. So what you're going to do is you're going to just, and this is right in the API, we have a function, it's get all. And so you're going to run poison.getAll, and you're going to get all of the poison components. And then from there, you know, because the entity's IDs are stored in those components, now you have a list of every entity ID that this system needs to operate on. And so if there's a situation where maybe the mere presence of the component doesn't signify it needs to operate, but the value of it. So you're fetching everything that has hit points and checking if it's less than 10. Or maybe you want to search for a specific value. You want to find every component, every hit point component where the value is 0. Like we have an API for that as well to search for specific component values. So really it's just about querying components in a way that's useful. And that's why I would recommend that components should have a purpose. Like how I said, like with hit points, like, oh, what's the purpose of hit points? And it's like, well, duh, it tells you how much life your character has. But it's like, that's not the question that I'm asking, is why are there hit points? Like, what is the game feature that requires hit points? And when you think of it like that, now hit points becomes a trigger. Now hit point, and maybe on the other end, hit points are going to be affected by another trigger. Like I was mentioning before, like attacks, you know, maybe you have an attack that is a component, like this attack has been made. And so when that system runs through, it's going to look and see, what are all the pending attacks? Maybe you have a pending attack component. What are all the pending attacks? And then from there, that gives you the information that gives the system the information that it needs in order to know who's going to take that damage.
Okay, so I think I roughly understand, or at least I'm feeling confident about components and systems. It's basically you have your behavior and your data. And the systems are going to run every tick. They're going to use whatever control flow they need, or maybe they'll just get all components of a particular type, apply some operation, change things in your system. Now your system's changed for the next tick. The thing that I think I'm fuzzy on is tags. Can you help me understand tags? Because I'm currently thinking about them like a Boolean, like, oh, I've tagged this with poison. But then I'm like, well, why don't I store that as a component? As some kind of a Boolean field. That's where I think I'm a little fuzzy.
Yeah. And honestly, you're not that fuzzy in this case, because that's pretty much spot on. Like a tag is basically a Boolean component. So it's kind of a bit of like syntactic sugar, because you don't really need to store true or false. Because if you have the component, then the value is always true, you know? So there's never going to be, you know, oh, I'm going to store the poison component and have the value be false. Because if that's the case, then just don't add the component. That's the magic, you know, that's still that thinking from, okay, well, I have a character and it has a field and the field is poisoned. ? And then it's going to say true or false. And that field has to exist for every entity in the world. You know, it's not that. Like with this, that player character, it could have the component or it could not have the component. So there's not really a need to store the Boolean value at all. But that is a way that you can think of it, is like a component. It's a component where the mere presence of the component gives you all the data you need. You don't actually have to store some kind of value like an integer or a string or something like that. You know, if you have hit points, if you have a hit point component with no value, that doesn't mean anything. It's like, how many? How many hit? But if you have a poisoned component, it's a value is not going to help there. Like maybe you have different levels of poison, and so the component is poison level that has a value. But if the question is just, are you poisoned or not, there's no value to store there. And so tag gives you an API that is specific to that, because most of the component API revolves around the component's value that it stores. The API around tags is just, do you have it or not? And once again, the ability to get all entities that have that tag. So if you put that poison tag on some entities, like there's a single function, poison.getAll, and you're just going to get all of the entities that have that poison component. So that's really going to be the main way that, like, almost for me at least, almost every system that I write starts with get all of this type of component. And that's going to be like the trigger that tells the system what to operate on. And tags are a perfect example of that. Like, it's just get everything that has the tag. That's what we want to deal with right now.
So that's really cool, by the way. I got really excited when you're talking about not needing to store the data of a Boolean. Seems like such a hit your head, bop your head because you had a V8 or whatever it was, moment that,
well, it's like when you see like, if that, when people write like, if variable equals true.
Yeah. That is one of the most common, patterns I have to train students out of, is that like, hey, if you're checking if something is a Boolean, just use the Boolean. Or if you're returning true, just use the condition that you had, or flip the condition if you're returning false. You don't need all that extra. So, I do want to clarify something, because it seems like I could, as a developer, and you know, you can't, you can encourage people down the right path of development, but they're always going to be able to, you know, write things in a weird way. But it does make me wonder, are there limitations of components in terms of like what data they can store? I noticed, we'll talk a bit about the generators that you've added later. I hope we have time for that. But I noticed that you actually specify what type of data something is going to store in the generator, I believe. So yeah, are there limitations to like what type of data my components can store, or recommendations, or like, cause now I'm thinking, well, if I'm storing a Boolean in a component, that's maybe a better use case for a tag. So what's the situation?
Right. Yeah, this is something that has evolved over the course of ECSX development. And like what we would find at first is that people would create components and then put like a map of a bunch of different data that's relevant to that component. Like they might have instead of hit points components, they might put like just player stats. And then inside it would have like a map that would say like hit points 50, mana 40, level 3, class rogue. And so, and what this does really is it prevents you from being able to search this data quite as efficiently. You're kind of coupling stuff together where it's like, okay, now when you take damage and you're going to get the player stats component, but now you're getting hit points, mana, level, class, and you're only operating on hit points. So now you've fetched three things. And like, this is one of the main reasons why I chose ECS for Elixir, is because of the downsides of message passing. Like when you are going to fetch some data from out of memory, like that's copied. Like a copy is made from one process heap to another, and that data has to be passed via a message. So one of the big problems that people have with game development in Elixir is that this has to happen like hundreds of times per second. You know, thousands of times per second. And we're basically, if we were to take this to its logical conclusion, you just get the standard object-oriented model of like, give me the character and you get 500 fields with it. And you only needed to operate on one of them. So the whole goal of ECS in general is to only operate on the field, so to speak, that needs to be operated on. When you want to get a piece of data, you only get that data. You don't get any unrelated stuff in order to minimize the amount of data that is passed via message and copied from process heap to process heap. So when we were seeing this kind of anti-pattern of kind of like composite components, let's call them, where a component is storing a bunch of components inside of it, like we were like, okay, well, we need a solution to this, but also like this was a great opportunity to introduce type checking. So the solution that we landed on is components are primitives. Components are not going to be a map of data. Components are not even going to be a tuples of data. Components are going to be an integer or a string, or like right now, I believe we also have timestamps in there. Like, but the goal there is to define what type of data this component is storing. Like, it doesn't make sense that hit points for one character would be an integer and for another character would be a string. Like, when you define your hit points component, you're going to define that as an integer or maybe a float. And components should stay that way. So when we do have type checking for these, if you try to create a hit points component that has a timestamp or a string or something like that, then it's going to fail. And the generators, as you've mentioned several times, just make this even easier. Like, it's already creating a component is one quick line in your terminal, but defining that type is also just part of that line. It's we took a lot of inspiration from other successful libraries using generators. Like, for example, like in Ecto, like when you're generating something in Ecto, like it's just one line in a generator. You can define the type, you can define the different fields in the schema, you can define references, etc. And so that was a goal for us, is just to be able to spin up a component, everything that component needs in one line from the generator.
Generators are such a phenomenal tool. And I think they're not everyone necessarily sees their initial purpose. I think a lot of folks think, oh, generator, that'll make me write code faster, right? That's the whole purpose. It generates the code for me. In reality, I think generators are an education tool first and foremost. They show developers, here is the style. Here's how you should write things. Like, the Phoenix generators are a phenomenal teaching tool, showing students how everything connects together for a particular resource. It's really, really handy. So I'm really excited to talk about the kind of adoption efforts that you've put into ECSX and helping people explore that. But I don't want to miss out on the last piece of our system that I'm still fuzzy, which is, so we've talked about entities, components, systems, tags, and the last one, I believe, is managers.
Right. Okay. So when you create an ECSX application, like, we have a setup generator. And basically what the setup generator is going to do for you, amongst a few other minor things, is create this manager. And so the manager is the module that kind of ties everything together, because we had gone through several different, more complex designs for the ECS, like the underlying OTP, design. And one of the things that we found that is not only simple, but also very useful is a single gen server, serializing things through a single gen server. And one of the big problems with using ETS, under the hood for storing things. Like, I mean, there's so many amazing positives to using ETS. Like, of course, one of them being it's in memory, so it's super freaking fast. But the downside is that you can get race conditions. And if you have multiple systems that are both trying to, you know, and we even kind of touched on it a little bit, like with hit points, there's multiple reasons why your hit points might go down. Like, it might be because you're poisoned. It might be because you're getting attacked. It might be that that's just how the game works, is like hit points go down over time, you know, like there's all sorts of reasons. Maybe you could be getting healed and your hit points are going up from a different thing. So when this happens, ETS doesn't necessarily have a way of handling that and not having data corruption. Like, that's something you kind of have to build in yourself. And most of the time that happens by having a gen server basically like at the gates. You know, that you have a guardian that is all traffic to and from the ETS table is going to pass through this gen server in order to handle any kind of conflicts like that. And the thing that we really found was that using a single gen server to serialize all of the systems, it allows the developer to feel much safer in developing their system logic. Not only is there not race conditions, but you also now know the order in which systems are going to run. And sometimes that could be a big deal. Like, for example, like if the death system from going down to zero hit points and losing the game, does that happen before or after you take damage? Because if the death system runs, says, okay, you have 5 HP, you're alive, and then right afterwards you take damage, now this tick is ending with you having 0 HP and still being alive. Maybe for some cases, like, that's not good. And maybe in most cases it still is, because like if the death is the first thing that happens, then in the next tick, you're not going to be able to do anything. You'll die first thing on that tick. But I think that it allows you to reason about your systems in a way that can be much more manageable for some systems. And And I shouldn't say system, I should say for some games or applications. And you know, that's the one thing that we really want to do, is make sure that that ECSX can work in whatever different use cases people have. Like, if you have a game idea, we really want ECSX to be able to support that and not be like, oh, well, it's not really a good fit because of this and this. Like, we want it to be able to handle as many different cases as possible.
That was one of the questions I definitely had about, because one of the things that OTP is really good at is concurrency, but one of the things that games need a lot of is synchronization. And so how do you contend with those two things? How do you enable that type of making sure that things happen in the order that you expect them to and that they're predictable, right? So I'm really curious to hear more about, oh, and by the way, the using the word systems, man, I love Elixir, but one of the things that makes teaching it really hard is our use of really common popular words. The number of times I've had to say, the context, and then realize, oh, but not like the Phoenix context, like the context of this is, or, you know, oh, so when we use the use macro, so now I have another one.
Components is definitely one of those too. Like,
one component, it's all components.
Even outside ECSX, like, we're using component for too many things. And now, like, with this, it's like, okay, no, it's not a function that takes assigns and returns a Heeks template.
And so if I'm understanding correctly, this point of synchronicity, is that the manager, or am I misunderstanding the kind of explanation here?
Yes. Yep. So what the manager is going to do is it's going to keep track. It also is something that keeps track of all your systems and all your components. So you could theoretically write code for a system, but not include it in the manager, and it wouldn't get run. Like, so that's one thing that the generators also do for you, is if you do use the generator, like, you don't really have to touch your manager file ever. Like when, because when you generate a system or a component, like it's automatically going to inject those into your manager. So hopefully, like in most cases, the manager is relatively hands-off and just kind of does its job under the hood, which is it's going to be the counter for ticks. So it's going to keep track of when each tick needs to get run. And then when it does run those ticks, it's going to run the systems in order. And so here we have strict serializability. Like we can always reason about the run order of systems and the effects of those system runs. However, the one thing is that you're not getting concurrency. You are just running things one after another single core. And so our goal for concurrency is that it's within individual systems where you would write your concurrency logic. And this is also a good fit for Elixir because of how low the bar is for introducing concurrency. It makes it extremely simple to add concurrency in a number of different ways in Elixir. So yeah, your systems are running one after another, but inside that system, like when you have that hit points reducing system, like maybe you have 100 attacks. Now that's up to you. How do you want to paralyze those? Is it necessary? Maybe the system is just so fast right now compared to your system resources, it doesn't matter. Maybe you have this World of Warcraft kind of system where there's 10,000 players and half of them are attacking something. And so you have a lot of attacks, and this now becomes a good candidate for you to introduce concurrency into that system's logic. So the systems themselves are not concurrent, but the logic within an individual system, that can be made concurrent in order to improve performance.
That's so cool. As I was reading about the system, I was wondering where the point of concurrency would be. And that was where intuitively it made sense that, okay, well, if you have some system that's going to change the health of a bunch of things, probably the health of one thing is not going to depend on the health of another thing. And so that's where you're probably not going to have difficult conditions happen where, there might be some system where like, oh, if this character's health hits 50, it unleashes an EMP attack and automatically damages everything else. And so you want to make sure that that happens afterwards and that there's no misordering there because that'll affect how the math of the game works out. But applying the initial damage to get it below 50, well, that can happen to this character or that character, and there's really no concern there. So on the individual changes to all of your components, you can have your concurrent operations and take advantage of some paralyzation there. But at the systems level, where you really want to be able to think about things in the proper order, my damage system should apply before my death checking or revival system. And so being able to still reason about it, it's a really, really clever application of OTP and kind of that synchronicity you get from having things put into a single gen server. So that's really cool. So I think that was a question I asked you a while ago when I'd first started exploring this. And so it seems like you've come to an understanding of where to leverage that concurrency.
Yeah. I mean, there was definitely a question of, do we introduce the concurrent, try to find some way of introducing concurrency of multiple systems running at the same time. And I'm not saying that it's completely off the table, but I think that for most cases, it's going to be simpler to reason about systems running with strict serializability and putting that onto the developers to implement concurrency using the patterns from Elixir in whatever way is going to serve them best, if at all. And even in some cases, like you were mentioning, like systems that have side effects that could introduce possible race conditions, like there are ways around that as well. Pretty much anything, any effect could realistically be like delegated to another system via the creation of a component. So let's say if you're under 15% health and then it sends out an EMP. Like when you're under 15%, it can create an EMP pending component, which then afterwards another system reads EMP pending components. You know, so if you are in a situation where you're feeling like the development or performance is being hindered by trying to do too much in one system, like it can be broken apart in order to separate them like that, just using components.
So can I have multiple managers, or is manager like a single concept? Like it's like my application supervisor almost.
Right. So a manager is you only have one of them, but there is the question of, you know, should there be multiple games in one application? You know, there's also that's something that's been brought up as well. Like, because yeah, there should be one manager per game. And for most people, they're going to have one game in their application. So one manager per application. And so that's kind of where we're at right now. And, you know, something that we could look and are looking towards in the future is like the possibility of, okay, well, what if you have multiple games running on the same application? Like it's not that you can't do it with one manager, because all of the system logic is totally separate. Like you could realistically have several games running on the same manager, and the systems and the components are just doing their thing in total isolation. There's nothing that's combining them into one single game, like that, except I guess the front end. But there is thoughts about, particularly like with the live dashboard, like I know we haven't touched upon that yet, but there, like when it comes to monitoring your game, like if there's a possibility of having multiple games, one manager for each one of those multiple games. And so then when you go into, let's say, ECSX's live dashboard to look at stats, to be able to organize those statistics based on, okay, well, this manager is at this percent load, this manager is at this percent load, stuff like that. Be able to say, okay, well, I want to look at these component tables, but only the component tables for this game, don't include these other component tables from another game. But that's still something that's just on the roadmap. Like we're really trying to consider all the different possibilities that people might want for their games. Even if it's not something I would want for my game, like I still want this to be, you know, useful for as many people as possible in the Elixir community. And maybe even people outside the Elixir community, bring them in and show them the strengths of Elixir through this framework. Like, hey, you can develop your game way quicker here than you would in Python or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And leverage the powers of concurrency and fault tolerance within a game, which feels very natural to me, other than you do need that point of synchronization, but having the ability to apply a bunch of computations in parallel feels like it makes sense for game development to me, so long as you have that synchronization process. So I'm really curious if things like, could you have systems that could operate, you know, independently of each other? Like those could be concurrent, so they all have to finish by the end of the tick. You know, you could parallelize multiple systems and say, well, these two systems definitely don't care about each other. Right? Like my health system and my plant growing system have, or those are bad examples because those aren't behaviors. But my, plant growing is not bad, but maybe my damage system, maybe those two things have really nothing to do with each other, right? I don't care if my plant got taller or if someone attacked my plant. Those things can happen independently. And so maybe we can leverage some concurrency, or maybe that's an over-optimization. And that type of flexibility will just make your systems harder to reason about and not really get you that much performance benefit. So I'm really curious to hear how things continue to develop in that area. I know we don't have too much time, so I really want to make sure in the last kind of bits of the episode here, we managed to hit the adoption, what you've done to make it kind of easy to use. What can people do
if they want to try out this this framework?
Yeah, ever since the beginning, like, we knew that giving people an easy in to this new technology, like, even if Elixir is not new to you, like, ECS probably is, and the API of this framework definitely is. So front and foremost of this framework is its tutorial. Like, I think that this kind of tutorial project is going to be most people's entry into the game, because it's going to cover not just like, okay, how do you make a component? How do you make a system? But like how these really are going to fit together in to construct a full backend. But also, this is also going to cover on some front end stuff. And I think that that's something that I was concerned about, was like, okay, you've built a game backend and then we just drop you off there. And then you know, maybe someone who is not an Elixir person and is just trying it out is like, oh yeah, well, so making the backend was great, but oh, I don't know anything about Elixir front end. Like, they're looking around like, oh, does Elixir have graphics libraries? Like, and then they're like, oh man, this isn't that great. Like, so part of one of the things that I wanted to do was be able to use something very simple like Phoenix Live View in order to create a front end that's usable and not too complex to get set up. So what we're doing in the tutorial is SVG, like, where you're going to get a little bit of the basics of SVG if you're not familiar with it, and using Live View to keep that SVG up to date as best it can, and hooking that up into the back end. And so that's not to say that, like, this is the way to do it. Like, we're still, this is a front end agnostic kind of framework. Like, and I have been looking into some alternative front end choices that could be added to the tutorial for those who are looking to stretch outside of Phoenix Live View. But for now, what we've got is you're going to build a backend and then you're going to run through and build a Live View front end. And at the end, you'll have a demo app where you can kind of sail your ship around the ocean. There'll be enemy ships that try to shoot at you, and then when you get close to them, you shoot at them. You've got hit points and you can die and stuff like that.
That's awesome. I hope there's at least pictures at the upcoming ElixirConf talk.
Definitely.
So we've already talked a little bit about the generators. So those make it easier for people to understand, okay, how am I supposed to work with these things? Because they can just generate a component. I think generate a system as well. Those are the two generators, or is there?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have four generators total. One of them is the setup when you first sit down and you mix PHX new and you make your new project. Like, you are also going to mix ECSX.setup. And that's going to set you up with a manager file that's all ready to start running systems. And then the other three are component, tag, and system. So component and tag are kind of the same thing, except tags don't have a type. So you would type ECSX gen component and then the type of the component, and bam, you have now that component is in your game ready to go. Like, you don't have to do anything else at all. Like, you have a full API in order to access, update those components. You have you know, your type checking, you have a module in your app, and that component is module has also been injected into your manager. So everything you need to do for that is ready to go. Tag is the same way, just without a type, because tags don't store data. And then with a system, the system is going to do everything except write the code. You know, it's not ChatGPT yet. But so it's going to create the system module. It's going to make sure that your system module, like, has the appropriate macro, has the appropriate function with the name and arity that will be expected by the manager. And all you need to do is just fill in the logic of your run function. So kind of like when you do ectogen migration, something like that. It's going to create a module at the top. It's using the migration, and then it's going to make that change function, but it's just empty. So it's up to you to say, okay, what does that migration do? Same kind of vibe here with the system. And what I found is that it makes the design process, like for your game, like just a series of generator commands. Like you can have a whole game idea in your head and just start typing out generator commands. And before you know it, you have the whole game is ready to go except for the individual pieces of system logic. And at that point, it's just use that component API, fetch the components you need, update the components you want to do. And then that's it. Your whole backend is done.
I'm realizing it was a very missed opportunity for me having built Connect 4 for the upcoming Elixir Conf talk. I really should have used that as a chance to try out this library. I think maybe tackling ECSX and LiveView Native would have been a lot all at once, but maybe that'll have to be a future refactor. There's one other thing I want to make sure that we talk about, which is, okay, so there's good tools for adoption. We have our generators. Looking at the documentation, it's very well documented. You have the guides, you have this tutorial project so people can get started as well, which is fantastic. Once I have my app running, I believe you also have built a live dashboard to make it easier to kind of understand and observe. Is that correct?
Yeah. And so for those who don't know, Phoenix Live Dashboard is something that comes with Phoenix and allows you to inspect the state of a running application with respect to any metrics that, like telemetry, that the app might be emitting. It will show the size that's being, like if you're using ETS, it will show the size of your ETS tables. It will show some various things relating to Ecto if you're using that in your app. Like basically getting different pages for different areas of your app that you might want to inspect. And so the goal here was to use this technology that pretty much everyone already has. You know, maybe they might not be using it, but if you're building an app with Phoenix, you do have access to that. And so to use this technology and just simply add another page that will show ECSX stats. And so the statistics that we have right now are probably the most important front and center is the overall load of your game. So every system runs every tick. So let's say that your server runs at, you know, you have a 20 tick server, so it's going to be 20 ticks per second. And so that would be 50 milliseconds. So every system that you write, all of your game logic has to run within 50 milliseconds. If it takes 51 milliseconds, now your game is going to start gradually. It's going to be 1 millisecond behind every single tick, and that's going to keep growing and growing and growing until eventually you're like a day behind. You know, you basically are on the track to system instability when you have a tick rate and system load that doesn't match up. So one of the things we want to do is say, okay, well, here's a bar that represents your 50 milliseconds. If assuming a 20 tick server, and that's configurable. So this bar represents 50 milliseconds. How much of it are you currently using? So when you pop in there, if you see that bar is full, you know, your systems are using all 50 milliseconds, like that's going to be rough. What happens if, you know, tomorrow your game gets more popular and you have twice as many users? Like your app's not going to handle that very well. So that's going to be your sign right there that you need to either lower the tick rate so that systems have more time to run or optimize your system through, you know, concurrency or, you know, a better algorithm or whatever. And so that leads me to the second thing that's displayed with ECSX Live Dashboard is the time of each system. So you're going to see the average runtime for each system that you have. So if you have your HP system, let's say you're seeing, oh man, it's taking, my system load is very high. I need to find something to optimize. And you look at your HP damage system and it takes 1 microsecond to run. And you're like, okay, well, yeah, I'm probably not going to optimize that too much. And then you look over at your pathfinding, you know, system or something, and it takes like a year to run. And it's like, okay, that right there, if I could just optimize that system, I'll be good. You know, that's the problem one. So being able to identify the problematic systems when you have them, identify sources of optimization. And that's something that has come up with me a lot. Like usually there's one system that is like doing a lot of work and really needs to be optimized. Like it needs to have the best algorithm. It needs, I've played around with introducing NX for numerical computation in order to improve performance with some systems that are heavy on numerical computation. Systems and overall system load has got probably the biggest feature for a live dashboard right now, but also the ability to say, hey, I want to see the HP of every entity in the game right now, you know, or I want to just see like, hey, how many entries are there in the components table of poison? Like how many entities are currently poisoned? And I think that this is, you know, not quite as useful, but can be good when you do have a bug. Like I remember once when I had a bug that I was trying to track down in one of my games. And then I looked at a table and the table should be when an entity like despawns, like if the mob is killed or something and dies, then the component gets removed. But that wasn't happening. So what was happening is I would watch the size of this component table and it would just keep going up and up and never going down. And I was like, oh, well, there's my bug.
That is really cool. Yeah, that is a phenomenal amount of observability into your system. I am so sad. This episode has to come to an end. I now have minutes to get to my next class. That is how much I had at this episode with you, Andrew. I feel like you and I can and should talk about this more because I think there's still a lot of interest and depth. And if folks are interested in learning more about ECSX, Andrew has an ElixirConf talk coming up, which will be happening in the beginning of September. So if you want to come in person, I'm also going to be there speaking about LiveView Native. So if you'd like to meet me and Andrew in person, I hope to see you there. Always feel free to come up and say hi. I love it when people come up and talk to me at ElixirConf. I'll be the guy with the long hair. You'll also be able to see Andrew there. So Andrew, is there anything else before we end the episode here that you would like to shout out to or mention for folks or kind of a call to action? Call to action here.
I think I really just want to shout out you, Brooklyn, and the Elixir Newbie podcast, and really give a serious thank you for having me on here and giving me this platform to share my work. I really appreciate that. And I hope that anyone who's listening to this and is interested in Elixir and might have a game idea, give it a try. Like this is something that you can definitely get set up and get your game up and running in an afternoon. So just give it a shot and feel free to reach out if you have any questions or if you want to put an issue up on GitHub or something like that. I'm around and I'm happy to help with any questions that anyone might have.
I very much never expect anyone to shout out the podcast, so that's very kind of you, Andrew. I really appreciate that. You've always been such a kind soul and a wonderful spirit to work with. For folks who don't know, Andrew has been very instrumental in Dockyard Academy, has provided feedback, and always been very supportive there. So really, really happy to have gotten the chance to speak with you here. Really excited about the work that you're doing, expanding game development in Elixir. That is going to be it for this episode of the Elixir Newbie podcast. I want to thank all of you so much for listening. I hope you Elixir newbies out there enjoyed this episode and learned a lot. I know I did.